You may find this hard to believe, but 60 songs that explain the 90s, America's favorite poorly named music podcast, is back with 30 more songs and 120 songs total. I am your host, Rob Harvilla, here to bring you more shrewd musical analysis, poignant nostalgic reveries, crude personal anecdotes, and rad special guests, all with even less restraint than usual. Join us once more on 60 songs that explain the 90s, starting Wednesday, May 17th, on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth, plus view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
Welcome back to another episode of the Ringers NBA Draft Show. My name is Kevin O'Connor, and joining me, as always, is the Ringers, J. Kyle Mann. What's going on, man? We're here in person in L.A.
Yeah, what a thrill. What a thrill. And we finally get some answers, Kev. We finally get a little bit of a map to kind of figure out how to talk about what's going to actually happen. We don't have to just kind of talk about the prospects, like where we get to start figuring out what decisions are going to be made. And this is where it really ramps up and gets fun.
Well, there was an epic game one between the Lakers and the Nuggets that we just got done watching. We'll talk about that on other podcasts. But tonight, for this pod, it is a draft show, Kyle. So we're talking about what happened hours earlier, what could have changed the NBA. Everything was chalk with the draft order up until the fifth pick. The Pistons get pulled. They move from 1 to 5. Disappointing, sad for them. But then we get to the top four, and the San Antonio Spurs get the number one pick from David Robinson to Tim Duncan to now Victor Wembanyama. 3 number one picks in their history, 3 bigs. And here we are, Kyle. This changes absolutely everything for the Spurs and the NBA as a whole, with Wemby now going to San Antonio.
Pretty good slugging percentage historically for the Spurs in this spot. And it's funny that, like, I was talking with you about, you know, you and I in person went to witness the what I have described as basically like a religious experience of the Wemby versus Scoot in Vegas, where post game you and I were just kind of at the beginning of talking about, and I think everybody kind of saw this on the horizon, that this made sense. From a just like, well, naturally, San Antonio, the team that honestly was like the internet, they put international like scouting and stuff. They were the team that were light years ahead in that sense. So you were just like, doesn't it make sense for Pop, who's a guy sort of at the like an inflection point of his career where it's like, will he keep going? He doesn't have to. Wemby is like a breath of fresh air, assuming Pop decides he wants to keep going.
Why would he not?
Yeah. And why would he not? You know, what a way to sort of a thing to start. You know, he probably won't go the duration of Wemby's career. For Wemby to stay healthy, ideally that would be the case. But I mean, it's something we saw coming, and we still were just it just seems like a great situation for Wemby. It's a great fit for him, and he'll be comfortable, and they're a franchise with a lot of like alumni that can help him,
yeah,
too.
And including a great Frenchman in Tony Parker. So I'm sure that'll be something there. And I think for Wemby going there to Pop, he's 74 years old. I can't imagine if Wemby has a long, healthy, fruitful career, 15, 20 years for Pop. Boy, oh boy, I doubt he goes that long.
If anybody could do it, though, got that wine longevity.
Yeah. You never know there. But you're right. Like, regardless of how long Pop goes as the coach of the Spurs, I think with San Antonio, I mean, even when they had Tim Duncan, nobody watched the Spurs. Like, they were considered a boring team. Nobody really kept eyeballs on them. They're in one of the, let's just be honest, of the 30 NBA teams. I've never been to San Antonio, but from what I hear, one of the more boring cities.
Ouch.
So they don't get a ton of coverage.
Watch out, Barkley. You're going to have them coming for you. Don't comment on the women, KLC.
And now, though, they do have that basketball fit that works. I think for them, Jeremy Sohan, all rookies team player, you know, he's dyeing the hair. He's acting like Dennis Rodman.
Cosplay.
He's great on defense. He improved on offense as the year went on. He can play make a bit. He improved as a shooter. But Devin Vassell and Keldon Johnson, those guys are the more proven commodities at the wing spot. Vassell, one of the better mid-range pull-up shooters in the league. Great three-point shooter coming off screens and handoffs. Like, I'm already getting like super excited with him and Wemby with the chemistry that they could have together. And Keldon Johnson, him attacking closeouts, him on defense. I think for the Spurs, you plug Wemby into this. You said it on our draft preview show. The Spurs are one of those teams where they have this good talent, Vassell, Johnson, Sohan, but they didn't have that centerpiece. And now that they have Victor Wembanyama there, I mean, they have a guy who in his, you know, Brian Windhorst flies out to France and interviews Wemby for a minute on ESPN after the pick was made, after the pick went to number one. The pick has already been made, to be fair.
Wemby looked like he was running on fumes. That was some incredible
footage.
It was like
2:30 a.m.,
he was
right?
Like, let's get through. Come on, let's go. Yeah.
But he said in that interview with Wendy, Wemby and Wendy, that could be a podcast.
There we go. Yeah.
Well, Wemby said to Wendy, you know, I'm ready to start competing for championships ASAP. The Spurs have this young nucleus, but they also have like $40 million in cap space. To me, the Spurs suddenly become a team where you're thinking, well, what do we want to do with that money? Do we want to start competing now? They're 30th in defensive rating last year. Could they go after a Brook Lopez, a veteran? Could they overpay to try to steal him from Milwaukee? $25, $30 million annually? I mean, I don't know. That's where my mind's going right now with the Spurs, Kyle. Could they become very good very soon?
Yeah, you start to wonder, like you said, 30th in the league last year. A lot of that is, I think that like adding a rim protector, a true like schematically like versatile rim protector, like Wemby, no offense to Zach Collins, who's probably just like, you know, snapping his fingers back to the bench for Zach Collins. great trajectory. No, I mean, like the interesting thing about Wemby, I think the face-up aspect of his game, the fact that he's not a true five that's like, he offensively isn't a guy who's like he has to have his back to the basket. He has a face up perimeter skill set. And I made the point in the past that like he sort of projects as a sort of like a more like positive like version of what Kristaps Porzingis does, but he brings you more stuff. So I think that's one of the interesting things about like when we were coming up to this draft about like where he might go is like what types of bigs can he not play with? So like if you start thinking about like if they went after like a Brook Lopez, or we talked about Indiana, could he play with Miles? You could get like a true like physical guy down there, and then you get a guy who can roam and give you like elite roaming rim protection as a helper, because his closeouts are also crazy too. He just gives you a lot, and it makes you wonder, I would shoot it back at you, like how big of a jump from 30th to what? How much of a jump do you think San Antonio can make?
I think it depends on what else they do. Really do. Like if I'm them, I want a Brook Lopez personally. And like it's early in the process here. We're not yet done with the conference finals. We're just beginning. But looking ahead, I just think that other teams on the market, there's not a lot of teams with cap space. I don't think the Bucks are going to have a ton of competition for Brook. And maybe he would want to stay there even on a discount to try to run it back and compete for a championship. But if you can like offer double or near double what the Bucks are offering, there's nobody in the league who does what Brook Lopez does.
He offers
what you're saying. He can be that roamer. He can be that beefy guy who's defending the Jokic's of the world. And then Wemby could be your roamer, because Wemby can do that too. So mm-hmm. I think if I'm the Spurs, I want to try to start winning ASAP, just like Wemby said he does, because that's also rooted in the belief in Devin Vassell and in Keldon Johnson. And you know who else is going to want to win as well? Greg Popovich.
For sure.
So Pop is going to want to get going winning too. And for all these other teams that fall down and don't, you know, result in Wemby, sorry to all of them. Charlotte does move to number two, though. They had the fourth best odds. And, you know, we talked about them again on our draft preview show. And now they're in a position to do something that you said could be a positive for them, which was Paris Koot-Henderson, point guard out of the G League Ignite, 6'2", explosive guard, you know, Westbrook-esque, that type of player with LaMelo Ball. who can play with and without the ball. We've seen him flourish without it as a shooter. He can move without it, but he's at his best as a playmaker. But they are at the inflection point of the draft here. This is really where things get started here, because they could also go with Brandon Miller out of Alabama, 6'9", has playmaking instincts in his own way, a better defender. He's bigger. He's a better shooter than Scoot. To me, Miller's the clear choice, but this is going to definitely be something that is debated within that Hornets front office, because there's a lot of logic behind pairing Scoot and LaMelo and having that be some supercharged backcourt, right, Kyle?
Yeah, and I think you could potentially put LaMelo out there with Brandon Miller, and then, like, if you want to keep PJ around, I think that makes sense. I think those two guys could play together, but I think
PJ Washington should be a keeper.
Yeah, and I think he's just kind of been waiting for a situation that makes sense for him. Like, I think he's like an interesting 4.5 in this league that could just needs to find a good situation. But yeah, I mean, the Scoot and LaMelo thing makes sense, because I think often when we think about NBA teams, we think about someone taking like the lion's share of the touches, and that's just the way that a team works, when really increasingly teams are moving towards this direction of, like, you want to have more. You look at OKC. Clearly, they have a guy who is like the tip of the spear for them. He's their primary scorer, but they have two guys that get a ton of reps, that get a ton of touches. And I think to be like a multifaceted, dynamic offensive team, you've got to be able to show multiple looks like consistently. A lot of guys can have a lot of touch. And I think if you had Scoot on ball, I think you get just as much of that playmaking, because LaMelo is a promising relocator as a shooter. I think that his passing skill set doesn't like require him to have the ball in his hands all the time. I think there's like a fire and ice kind of thing that is really nice. And I think personality wise, Scoot would be a good fit for LaMelo. I like that.
I mean, both of them, I'm fine with either. I'd go Miller. I think he's the better prospect, but Scoot LaMelo would be exciting in its own way and make a lot of sense from a basketball standpoint. And what Charlotte does is going to have a direct effect on the number three pick with Portland, because Portland moves up. You know, they're the one team that did slide into the top four, bumping down the Rockets and bumping down the Pistons. So, look, man, I think for Portland, they have Damian Lillard, who has already expressed that he doesn't want to have, you know, go through more of a rebuild and more young players. Well, now your team's got the number three pick in the draft, and it's very possible Scoot Henderson could be the guy on the board there if the Hornets go with Miller at two, which could happen. Scoot Henderson's a point guard. Damian Lillard's a point guard. They already have Anthony Simons. You're not going to draft a third smaller point guard. Like, Scoot looks like a NFL linebacker.
Shaden wants to evolve on ball too.
Yeah,
so you got a lot
sure.
of mouths to feed on
Absolutely.
That front.
Absolutely. Yeah. So for Portland, it's a position right now where I could see them doing anything. They could keep the pick and draft Scooter Miller and trade Dame. They could keep the pick and keep Dame and say, you know what, dude, like maybe you can win with this guy. They could trade down. They could trade out. They could try to build with Dame. They're another team just like Charlotte. San Antonio is the only certainty. Two, who knows? Three, they could go any direction. Like, somebody could move up to this point as well. Like, Orlando has two firsts.
Yeah.
Two lottery picks.
Yeah, I guess it really depends on what you'd have. I mean, you have to look at the fit and the needs for those teams in the 4 through 10, 4 through 14 range, and think, are any of them going to covet Scoot? This is, we talked about this. Yeah, I remember I think it was probably a month or so ago, I kind of was wondering if this ended up in a situation where they had the opportunity, or it was implied that they would get Scoot. I wondered if they would trade out. I kind of feel like that's what they might do, because it seems like, doesn't it kind of feel like the feeling, you know, when you put your ear to the wind, whatever, like, it just kind of feels like they're leaning towards doing whatever they can to keep moving in the short term with Dame. I could see them, because they just don't have any need for a Scoot. I mean, long-term, will Scoot be better than Simons? Do we know that for sure? Not really. I mean, like,
Simons is really good.
Yeah.
Scoot's a better playmaker, though, than Simons, I believe.
Yeah, I don't know that it's like a total, like a for sure shoe-in, but it's like, yeah, I mean, I could see them totally trading out if they, you know, it could happen.
And a lot of teams could. I mean, you mentioned the needs of teams 4 through 10. I said Orlando with two lottery picks, 6 and 11, but it could also be somebody like the Rockets saying, we want to move up one spot to number 3 to assure we get our guy, using, you know, a bundle of our future picks that we received through numerous other trades. Like, Houston could move up as well. There's a lot of teams that could try to, and the Rockets do fall to number 4. They had the second best odds. They're the second biggest loser in this year's lottery. The first biggest loser is the Pistons at 5. We'll get to them in a moment, but Houston, man, at number 4 at this point, in my mock draft on The Ringer, I have them taking Amen Thompson out of the overtime elite. And for them, you think about the position that they're in right now. Obviously, you want to have Wemby. Goes without saying. You would have loved, you know, Brandon Miller for that matter too. But Amen Thompson's a really high upside player. And I think about the fit with him and Jalen Green, two hyper-athletic guards in the backcourt. Green less of a playmaker, Thompson more of that driving force. And Thompson's more of an energizer on defense as well. It feels like there could be something there that could make sense with the backcourt with him and Green, and then with, you know, you get Jabari Smith and Şengün and Tari Eason and a bunch of quality young talent on that team. Thompson could be the piece that they actually need at number four.
Yeah, I mean, an upgrade at like rim protection, like a rim protector would have been like the nice thing, but I don't think that there's a guy that makes sense value-wise to reach for at that point that high. I mean, the one thing your mind goes to is like Thompson and Jalen Green, they're skinny. I mean, like skinny backcourts can get picked on pretty easily. My question for you, and this is just hypothetical in the moment here, I mean, like Anthony Black versus an Amen Thompson, they offer similar things, but it's just Amen is such an off-the-charts athlete. I was telling some of our guys that we were watching the game with it. Like, I mean, next year he's going to be maybe arguably the best perimeter athlete in the league. I mean, Amen will. I mean, which one do you go for? I mean, Black offers a lot of the same things. He's like a monster defensively. He takes a lot of pride in it, gives you a lot of energy, gives you that connectivity. But I definitely could see them supporting Jalen in the way that you're talking about, like just giving you some more switchability, cross switch, take away some of the pressure for him to guard the ball. It makes sense on that front.
I think Houston's also another team that could move out. It's very possible at number four. That's something that's been, you know, kind of out there throughout the year. Like, well, who knows with Houston? If they don't get number one, they could be a team. We know about the James Harden potential interest. Maybe they try to move number four for another player, sign Harden, trade four for, you know, insert, you know, top 30, top 40 player here with other picks. I mean, Houston could move out as well. Like, this could be the way this draft shook out, you know, it went chalk up until number five. But the way those teams landed in the top four, I think, makes for a very, very interesting next handful of weeks leading up to the draft when it comes to the trade market. And then at number five, the Pistons. I mean,
brutal.
Yeah. I mean,
brutal.
Yeah, really brutal. You lose Cade all year and, you know.
And for what now? Yeah. I mean, assuming he like really, it's a legitimate problem. I don't know if they held him out maybe longer than they had to or something like that.
It was an issue. But I mean, maybe they wouldn't have, you know, went as far with, you know, the surgery and whatnot, but it was an issue.
Yeah. Yeah. I was noticing kind of a phenomenon with this draft where it seems like for the teams, you and I had a conversation last week about like there are some teams that have the absence of sort of a roadmap for what they want to do, and kind of going from nothing to having a roadmap is like the hardest thing to do. I think for the teams that are like the furthest away out from in that like 3 to even to 10 range, I feel like it's especially demoralizing, because if you're really far away, I don't feel like there are like these surefire, like if we take this guy, his like superstar or even star or even like just the upside feels lower to me past like the 3 spot. So it just seems like the teams that are closer, like in Orlando, it's not as devastating, you know, whereas if you were like the Pistons or the Rockets, it's a brutal, brutal beat. Like, the consolation prizes are fewer, I feel like, in the top 5.
I mean, I guess it depends on your evaluation of Cade Cunningham. If you view Cade as a guy who's going to become a top 10 player in the league, then you're like, yeah, well, we got our guy. We got our guy. You seem skeptical. You're looking at me like you don't see that upside with Cade Cunningham.
It
was a number one pick.
Just to give you an idea of how the number one pick varies from year to year. I mean, I was a huge Cade defender, like from way even before he got drafted. And I even like, I don't know about him coming to top 10 player. A, because that's a tough racket. There's so many good players, but like who out there do you think even thinks that at this point, maybe even outside of the Pistons org? I don't know. I mean, it would have been, they lost a lot. There's no way around it. And I don't know that there is a pick for them at 5 that is going to like really make them the needle move. Do you think they'll stay put, the Pistons?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it just sucks.
It seems like there could be like way more movement than normal in this
draft. Absolutely. I mean, like, cause then you go to Orlando at number 6, they also have the 11th pick via Chicago with the Nikola Vucevic trade from a couple years back. And Orlando, they have so much young talent already. Franz Wagner, Wendell Carter, Paolo Banchero were the number one pick last year. Even Fultz is still young. I mean, up and down their roster, they have a lot of good, young, talented players. And the way they closed that season, how competitive they were, I mean, they almost lost their lottery pick. They almost snuck into the play-in. They could be a team with 6-11 that says, hey, Portland, don't you think two picks would be more beneficial for you with the start of this rebuild than one pick? Or like, hey, Houston, maybe you just want to even add more assets to your pile. Maybe you like the guy, maybe the guy you want at four, maybe they want Anthony Black, not Amen Thompson. They can get Anthony Black potentially at 6 instead of at 4. It could be that type of year this year. I'll tell you what, I don't even know if 6-11, that might be too much for number 4.
Yeah.
Because it does
I think it
out.
Is. That's what it I was thinking be. When you were saying that. I would stay put if I was in Orlando. The only thing about
so
it is...
you want to draft two then. Two guys to kind of like... fill the gaps around everybody, like a Cam Whitmore,
yes.
Grady Dick at 11, maybe something like that.
This is what I thought all along they might do. I don't know that they're going to be able to pull it off because these two guys might be off the board, but I had pegged for them like Whitmore or Kaysen. Like those were the two guys that I was like, these two guys make sense. Like we talked about Whitmore. The touches are accounted for. It's a great developmental path.
What do you
like
about Whitmore?
Whitmore is, I mean, he's just a sports car of an athlete. I think you compared him to a car in your draft guide,
yeah,
didn't you?
I think a semi truck with a Ferrari's accelerator, something like that.
He's big, he's powerful, but I think that he has like switchability. Like, I think that he could give them, like, he could be a tough assignment defensive player for them in a way, like, you don't force Franz to guard. Like, I just think he could, it gives them switchability upside that's really interesting. And then if you manage to get him and Kaysen, then I think they really need fluidity in their like movement shooting. I think they need another movement shooter on the floor to help them get some grease into the offense. But I think those two, I mean, you could even just trade one of the picks. I mean, I think they stand to answer some of their questions, though. Like you said, it flattens out in a way where I think I would just make the picks personally.
At number 7, the Pacers. In my mock draft up on the Ringers NBA draft guide, I have Taylor Hendricks out of UCF going to the Pacers. I just view him, Hendricks, as one of the more versatile defenders in this year's draft. He would be a great fit next to Miles Turner in that front court. You'd have a 5 and a 4 that could both space to behind the arc. You'd have a great pairing for Tyrese Haliburton. Anybody can fit with Haliburton, to be fair. But Hendricks is a good shooter. You know, he can screen and roll like he did in high school and occasionally in college. Hendricks, to me, is one of those guys, whether it's Indiana or somebody else in the middle of the lottery, could end up an instant impact player in the NBA with upside long term.
Yeah, I think he'd bolster your offense in a way that, like, he's going to get open shots with that group. I mean, you know, we've talked a lot about sort of the pain points in his development, I think, are like him attacking closeouts and like him just developing his off the bounce game. But we had similar questions about Keegan Murray last year and the way that he did. And, you know, he went into a situation where the role was sort of defined. But the defensive thing that you talked about, I think, is key because last year, Indiana was like 4th in the league, I believe, in switches on ball screens, and they were by far the most ineffective switching team in the league. So clearly, if you read into that and say that's some part of the plan for them, that they want to continue to grow in that way, Hendricks would be a pick that would make sense going both directions. I mean, I've heard people talk about Jairus Walker there too, to give you some more beef to guard some of those bigger players and things like that and contain ball pressure. But either one of those could make sense for me.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I mean, like the way they play, they clearly want to be a switching team. So whether it's Hendricks or whether it's Jairus Walker out of Houston, somebody like that would make a lot of sense for them considering their current core and the way that the style of play that they do on the court. So I think, you know, after that we get 8 and 9, Wizards and Jazz. You know, this is at a point of the draft where who knows what could end up happening, where players could go. This is where things really start to flatten out. The Wizards, it's going to come down to what happens with Bradley Beal. Other than that, they're a clean slate. The Jazz, obviously, Lauri Markkanen, you know, he wins Most Improved Player of the Year. He's an all-star. And Walker Kessler, all-rookie team, you know, one of the best rookies in all of basketball. They have a lot of good there. But for the most part, the Jazz and the Wizards feel like just clean slates, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I had kind of broken down by teams, and I was writing down what their core was and what their thing is that they need to address. And for both the Wizards and the Jazz, I just wrote, doesn't matter, exclamation point, because they just need to to go with what, like you said, like with the Wizards, I imagine the Wizards are like one of those yard sales where you ask the person, is this for sale? And they're like, I feel like if you went to the Wizards yard sale and asked them, hey, is this for sale? And you kick the tires on whatever it is, everything's for sale. Like, I think there's nothing that, knowing the Wizards, my thinking here is like the total opposite, because they seem to do the total opposite of what I think they're going to do in most situations. And it seems maybe their ownership group is pretty motivated by staying kind of not bottoming out all the way. If I were them, though, I mean, it's just best available for both of these teams, I would think.
For sure. There's no doubt about it with both of them. And the Jazz are especially interesting, though, considering their amount of picks that they have. If Utah had moved up to number 4 or number 3, I would have been very interested to see, hey, what can they do to move up to number 2 with the amount of draft capital that they received for Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert. But at number 9, even then, I mean, I'm intrigued. Like, what could they do to move up to 4? Could they put together enough picks to move up to that spot? Is there a player Danny Ainge is targeting? Or maybe does he just want to stay put at number 9 and take the best available player there? Number 10, the Mavs. They would have been, as we said on our draft preview show, the most, it would have broke NBA Twitter if the Mavs got the number 1 pick. The Spurs didn't quite as much. Everybody's, celebrating in their own way. It's very cool that it happened, but Twitter would have shut down if the Mavs moved up from 10 to number 1 to pair Wemby with Luka. With that said, they didn't. But they did keep their pick.
Yeah.
If they had fell to 11, they would have lost it to the Knicks. So their tanking for, a couple of weeks was at least a success to keep their draft pick this year. At number 10, it's very similar to 8 and 9 here. They could go a lot of different directions. I could see them as a team, if they want to add another ball handler to their rotation, somebody like a Cason Wallace out of Kentucky. I mean, his defensive presence, everything that he can provide on that end, the complementary, shot creation next to Luka being your primary could make sense for them. Also, you could go, to a Jairus Walker type. We talked about him briefly earlier, out of Houston, someone who's versatile on defense. He did a little shot creation in high school, less so than at Houston. But primarily, I think about him like next to Luka, a screener, someone to force mismatches, a cutter, spot-up shooter, and a defensive weapon, which is something that they severely need in that front court. So I think for Dallas here, assuming they even keep the pick, again, another one of those teams, they're trying to win now. Are they actually going to keep their pick? But assuming they do, I lean towards a Jairus Walker type more so than a Cason Wallace type. But what do you think, Kyle, for Dallas?
I think the two things that you're weighing are sort of the short timeline reality, which is the heaviest reality with Luka. I think that you got to draft somebody that's going to be ready to go. I know we've kind of talked about the guys that we have a list of guys that we think are going to be most ready to go out of the gate. And those tend to be older guys. But, if you're just going raw basketball thing, like what do we need the most? I think that it'd be amazing if they could add some more rim protection, if they could just add some more backline sort of competence. But reaching to number 10 for that kind of thing, I just don't know that they're going to do it. Are you really going to reach for a Derek Lively at 10? Are you going to reach for a Najee? I don't think it's going to happen. So I think it's more likely that they're going to hope that one of these guys that maybe a non-shooter, I think, is probably a tougher sell for the Mavs at this point. But yeah, again, I know we keep saying Cason, but I think somebody that can, like we said, cross switch with Luka, that's something you always want to try to find. And if you can get somebody that has some playmaking upside too and some shooting upside, that would be a home run. But is that guy going to be available at 10? Like, I don't think they're going to go for like a Grady Dick. I don't know that it's going to be, that seems like adding another defensive potential liability for them with a team with like championship aspirations. I don't know that they're going to do that.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And after that, Orlando, we talked about them earlier as two picks at 6 and 11. OKC at 12, Toronto at 13, New Orleans at 14. It was all chalk there. Any thoughts at the top of your mind for those teams at the back of the lottery?
For OKC, I guess it's a question of you're well on your way. You're a team that's very much knocking on the door. I wonder if they're going to stay there, because I don't know that they're going to be able to get kind of what are you looking to add? I don't know if you're looking to add another like dribble pull-up shooter. I would assume, I mean, You had Nick Smith attached to them at one point, didn't you?
I believe I had them in there as a pick in a mock. In the current mock draft, I have Leonard Miller out of the G League. He's been a fast riser throughout the draft season, but it started at the end of the G League season. Leonard Miller was spectacular for the Ignite to end the year. Numbers up across the board, shooting efficiency from inside the arc, behind the arc, volume was up, everything was better. And since the season ended, he has really been hard at work at P3 on his shooting mechanics. And the people I talked to around the league are like, I mean, it seems pretty real. So if you have Leonard Miller at, he came in at 6'9", I believe, at the NBA draft combine measurement, 6'9", with his length and versatility on defense, he can handle a little bit for you. If the shot's for real and he produces a lot like he did to end the season for the Ignite, he's the type of player that it feels like OKC could take a swing on at number 12 if he's even there. Leonard Miller could still rise more. That's my understanding with him. We'll see how it pans out, but keep an eye on Leonard Miller.
Yeah, he's one of those, every year there's sort of the, and sometimes this is inconsequential, and sometimes it's the little differentiator that you need to say, like, okay, this guy's special. I mean, he was definitely one of the combine guys that, as you're kind of perusing the spreadsheet of the, looking for numbers that pop out, I mean, your eyebrows went up when you saw Leonard Miller, because he's lanky. I mean, he give you some more. OKC's taking a gamble on a few guys like this. You know, Usman Jang is a guy last year that was,
Poku.
They just keep taking the stabs, and it's like you add another guy who, I mean, bring him along slowly, you know. He's not going to be expected to handle the ball much with OKC. It's going to be, you know.
It's catch, Chase. Catch it's a show.
Yeah, catch and shoot and, you know, attack the basket and take, you know, defensive assignments. I'd assume he'd spend quite a bit of time in the G League if OKC did pick him up. But he's somebody that the optimists – have to be feeling pretty good about him right now, because the movement on him is pretty positive.
For sure, absolutely. And I think with Toronto and New Orleans, I mean, they're in an interesting spot at the end of the lottery, because a lot of the guys that I have in that range are guard types that could fit there. You know, think about Toronto. They have Scottie Barnes, Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby. They're loaded with wings. They got Jakob Poeltl at the deadline, who helped bolster their defense. But they need more shooting, especially if Fred VanVleet leaves this summer. But even if they does, they do need that help there. So I think a guy like Kobe Bufkin out of Michigan, that's why I have slotted in there in my mock draft right now.
Think he'll climb that high?
Very well could. There's a lot of late lottery hype for him right now. Bufkin, two-way guy, you know, gritty defender, very tough on that end, can handle the ball a bit. I'd love to see a two-man game with him and Scottie Barnes running dribble handoffs together. Could be pretty exciting. Or even like a Nick Smith, who I have at New Orleans at number 14. But a Nick Smith, a guy you've liked throughout the year as we've talked about the draft, and up and down for him, but there's no denying his scoring talent and his length and his ability to kind of make plays even when he's not scoring. So, you know, in that range of the draft, the Keontae Georges of the world, the Jordan Hawkins type, feel like those teams, or if Grady Dick were to slip a little bit to the back of the lottery, somebody like that can make a lot of sense for Toronto or New Orleans based off their existing personnel, with the forwards that we mentioned with Toronto, and then, of course, with Zion and Ingram, theoretically, with New Orleans, but definitely guys like Trey Murphy and Herb Jones, they could use some backcourt help alongside CJ McCollum.
Yeah. With Toronto, it seems like their tolerance for drafting guys who are going to be put strain on kind of defensively what they're trying to do, it seems like their tolerance for that is pretty low. So, but I also do think that, you know, you gotta play both sides of the ball, and it doesn't, like the VanVleet thing you said about Keontae George, I think is somebody, one of the better like pick and roll dribble pull up shooters in the draft.
Up and down year for him at Baylor, but they're definitely a very impressive guard.
Yeah. And, you know, Bufkin also makes sense. I think somebody, he just adds some more kind of fluidity to your offense. I don't know that they're going to like reach for like a Jordan Hawkins type, or like, it makes me wonder who is going to reach, not trying to make it about Jordan Hawkins here, but what team is going to use him, or what team does he make the most sense for? Because what he does is very specific and very, very useful, but it's kind of, he's not a big time driver. So you think he's probably going to go to a team that runs a lot of off screen offense, maybe a Miami,
the Warriors.
Or the Warriors. But we were talking about Bufkin with the Warriors makes sense, but like, it sounds like you are unsure or not confident that he'll even be there.
I mean, this is still a long way to go. I mean, there's another over a month until the draft, and the combine is only beginning this week. You know, we're recording this on Tuesday night, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, big day ahead, and then you get pre-draft workouts, pro days. I mean, we know the order now, though, Kyle.
Oh, yeah.
We know the order, but there's still so much that's going to be happening over this next month. We get a lot planned on the draft show. Definitely going to bring on our friend Tyler Parker to talk about Oklahoma City. A whole bunch else coming as well for the next, 6 weeks, Kyle, leading up to the NBA draft. I'm fired up, man. What a night, man. Congrats to Spurs fans and the Spurs front office and Greg Popovich at his old age at 74, getting a coach, all these legends, and now a legendary prospect in Victor Wembanyama. Last thought with Wemby. Woj and all of them on the pregame show were like talking about Wemby as the greatest prospect ever.
I was hoping you'd say this. Yeah.
I think it's a bit much to say he's a better prospect than LeBron James. And I think Wemby is probably the second greatest prospect ever. Maybe the third. You could say Kareem as well. Like there's like if you want to go back further. But since LeBron, he's the greatest prospect we've seen. But greater than LeBron, I don't know.
I feel like those are probably the three, I think, if you think about like what Kareem was. He was just a can't miss, had been like a three-time national champ, player of the year, was an unstoppable player at all levels, a unicorn, an alien in a similar way, physically phenomenal. I think that those three guys have that in common. Yeah, I was surprised that Woj seemed like he really wanted to hammer that point. He said it several times. And I was like... I was like, yeah, but you know, like what LeBron does, you know, you can't understate the uniqueness of that and the longevity too. I think the questions about longevity are the thing that makes too that you have to consider in there. It's like it was less of a worry, I think, about like LeBron's frame. You know, we'd seen a frame like that work. Now, if Wimby's frame, I don't know. It's you know, it's
the history of players that are over 7'2" is. Very mixed.
Yeah.
A lot of those guys have short careers. A lot of them have injury-riddled careers. And with Wemby as lean as he is, that makes things especially interesting as well. He has played every game for the Mets 92 this year and for the French national team, but they play like once a week.
Yeah.
Once a week. That's part of the reason why his camp made him sign there, so he would play every game and so he wouldn't have an extensive NBA-style schedule. But guess what? That's what it's
going to
be.
And he's going to a team that one of the pioneers of management. So this is a great man. This is a great, you know.
It really could be a great fit in a lot of different ways for Victor Wembanyama going to San Antonio.
Yeah, Adam Silver under his breath was probably, that's where his mind went. Stern would have been all over this. He would have been on the phone now. You know, he's got to play.
Stern would have had those lottery balls super weighted as they were bouncing around there in that private room.
I said, you know, I was like, we know the fix is in if Silver keeps blowing on his hands before he grabs the envelope. But we didn't see anything nefarious, luckily.
Oh, man, dude, I'm fired up. I'm so excited to see what unfolds because, like you know, like we talked about San Antonio, suddenly maybe they become a team for trades, for free agents. So much is going to change over the months ahead. There's going to be a lot of rumors. I can feel it already. Trade season's going to be fun, Kyle.
It's going to be wild, dude.
I'm fired up, man. Kyle, thank you so much for flying out to LA and doing this podcast. I look forward to the coming weeks, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Ringers NBA Draft Show. Thank you to Jonathan Kerma for producing, replacing Jesse Lopez this week. He's out. He'll be back next week. Thank you so much. Please give us a rating and review wherever you listen to the podcast. It really does help. Have a good rest of your day.
This episode is brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. As a ruthless king builds his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.